Hello everyone, my name is Peter Zaitsev and I am founder and CEO of Percona, the company which specializes in open source databases. And not a surprise, that is what I'm going to talk to you about. And I'm going to talk about the changing landscape of open source databases from two dimensions. The dimensions, one is what is going with open source in general, right? And the second one is what is going on and changing landscape in a database, database technology, right? So let's talk about the free and open source software. And I will use those terms interchangeably for the rest of those presentations, because I believe while there are some minor differences between attitude of those organizations, for most of the people it is pretty much the same. So let's look briefly at the history of the open source software. Now, one thing which was very interesting for me to discover as I was looking at that is what if you look at the history of the software, the first software was open. In the early days, their software and the hardware were bundled, and because software worked only on the hardware of a particular vendor, right, there was no point of keeping it closed, right? Even more so, the early adopters, which were using the computer systems of the early days, really could help to maintain that code, to fix bugs, add functionality, and so on and so forth. And that was really valuable for the companies at that time. And also the changes were actually openly shared according to academic principles of sharing knowledge, because a lot of early days computers were used in that space. Now, if you look at development in the United States, at least, IBM had to unbundle software and hardware in part in response to the antitrust lawsuit, right? So it doesn't have kind of complete monopoly, right? And doesn't allow other folks to produce software for its hardware because, well, they can't compete because software is kind of given for free. Another important thing what happens here is what computer software becomes a copyrightable item in the United States, which it was not, right? Now, one interesting thing I was looking at this here, trying to get some more locally appropriate information. It looks like things in East Germany continued this way for much longer time when computer software was not copyrightable, right? And it was allowed to be freely copied because of that for many years afterwards. Well, according to Wikipedia, at least. Then computer software becomes copyrightable item that really created a multi-billion dollar software industry we know today, and really create the proprietary software as a major class of intellectual property many companies rely on, whether they are directly in the software business or just build something for use in-house, right? And that comes us to the second stage of the open source software, right? Which I would call that the era of romantic open source and a free software, right? This is one of the leaders, Richard Stallman, which I am sure some of you have heard about. And I picked this picture because for some weird reason, he's wearing Percona logo on his head here. I mean, I don't know why Bitcoin didn't exist at that time, for sure. The best illustration for that era, I think, it can come from this book Linus Torvalds wrote a few years later, which was talking about why he created Linux, and that was just for fun. It was not something like, oh, I saw the market's need and I thought I could create a multi-billion dollar industry, right? That was not really the reason, right? A lot of a reason to create, to contribute open source at that time were really driven by making a difference more than making the profit. Now, if you look as we transition to 2000, we can see the rise of open source. That can be seen in a different ways, right? From the famous quotes from Steve Ballmer, the Microsoft CEO, at that time calling Linux cancer. Well, thank you for noticing. To the big exit at that time, as Sun was Sun acquired MySQL for $1 billion. Right now, there are many open source companies which are worth many billions of dollars. But at that time, the $1 billion acquisition for open source company, that was phenomenal. You know, no company until Red Hat really got there. That also was creating an era where a lot of businesses really recognized the value of open source and really starting to embrace the open source first approach, right? Where open source software is seen as a better choice than proprietary software. Everything is being equal. Now, if you look at open source as a software engineer, right, an open source community member, you often will see, will value that for a lot of intrinsic values such as you know, openness and freedom. Well, if you look at the business, we see open source often used because of a different reasons, right? From a business side, it's all about the costs and the ROI. And the open source software offers you both direct lower costs, right? Because you don't have to pay ransom to somebody like Oracle, right? That also makes your cost easy to get, lower because a lot of engineers, software developers, folks, operating systems now prefer open source. And that means it's often easier to find engineers, and they're going to better engineers if they love open source. Open source creates better productivity. It creates faster innovation because you don't have to rely on a vendor, which may be moving at a glacier pace to innovate and to change your software. You can do it yourself. Like, for example, in MySQL space, again, databases very close to me, we could see when MySQL was moving slowly as it was digested first by Sun and then later Oracle, companies like Google, Facebook, and a few others would enhance MySQL for their needs independent on a vendor. And also we at Percona could create an improved MySQL version called Percona Server for MySQL. We could not have done that if that's the proprietary software. And also what is very important here is avoiding software vendor lock-in, right? That is really very valuable, especially that is seen by the enterprises which has been there around the block for a long time, many decades. They have often seen as Oracle came about the market as this kind of nice company which saved you from big blue IBM's dominance and lock-in with hardware and software combined, right? But in a decade, in a decade, it transitions to be very well described by this quote: "What Oracle doesn't have customers, Oracle has hostages, because people are so much locked in with Oracle database software, they can't really leave that, right? And having a software lock in is really very important kind of strategic blunder, right, or strategic weakness, because this way you will have a vendor pretty much dictate you your pricing, and in many cases the technology roadmap which comes from that. Okay, now if you look at the next generation of open source, many companies have been started as businesses first, right? It was no more about romantic ideas about the open source, but that was often about, hey, how can we get the company really make a lot of money. And a lot of those companies, they are, of course, venture funded. They are founded by the venture capital. And with that, they really need to provide very high returns and very high returns fast, right? If you are familiar with the VC industry, it's not an industry which is interested in making the trees greener, right, and world peace. This is the industry which is focused on making money for their partners, right? And typically, because they invest at a very high risk, right, most of the ventures expected to fail, then they really need to get the high returns and very fast. Here is, I think, what is interesting, what has been happening. It was trying to mix the attractive message of open source, which, as I said, and was understood by the businesses as the better choice, with the classical their business growth strategies, such as build a monopoly, avoid commoditization, increase stickiness, build anti-competitive modes, all these kind of things you learn in a business school. But if you think that it is very much against the early days or traditional romantic open source software values, because it's not about creating stickiness, it's about choice. It's not about anti-competitive, it's about a cooperation with different folks, mostly often with your competitors. And also that really creates a huge variety of not quite open source software, as you would see, which can use open source, right, or some other similar wording like open or something in or free in the marketing, but which will not provide you all open source software value, such as open core. Then you would have both commercial and sort of crippled open source versions of the same software. You will have open source eventually, then you will have outdated version of the software as an open source, right? Outdated, insecure, and unmaintained, I would add. And then the actually supported version as a proprietary. There is variety of shared source licenses. Then you can see the code, maybe use that in some conditions, but it's not fully compatible with open source, right? And also there is an open source compatible software, right? And let me talk about that open source compatible software maybe a little bit more, because I think that is the most confusion for a number of people. Now, open source software is a proprietary software which claims to be compatible with some open source software, right? So for example, in our database space, Amazon Aurora for MySQL is compatible with MySQL. Amazon Aurora for Postgres is compatible with Postgres, right? Now, we have to understand what that compatibility means, right? And what I like to call that is Hotel California compatibility, right? Because it is compatibility which is really designed for you to be able to move to this technology easy, but you will have a hard time moving back once you really adopted it to the fullest potential. That's maybe some additional functionality it provides. It's maybe extra performance, extra security, have abilities, some other things, right, which you may not even know what you're using, right? And this is not to say that such technology should not be used, right? Actually, there is a lot of a very good open source compatible technology. It is just what you need to understand what you're getting in. And if you really value being able to not use that technology, you make sure your application is being also tested and validated with completely open source solution, which I know many folks do not do, right? And then when we try to do it a couple of years later, we find it is actually quite hard now to go back and avoid all that lock-in they created unknowingly. So now, if you look at that not quite open source software, there is a lot of positives here, right? Which really with venture capital and other really allows a lot more investment and a higher pace of innovation. If you look at the last decade, there is so much great stuff going on in open source, well, and in generally in database space, which would not be possible without that, perhaps, right? And a lot of that investment, it spills out to the fully open source solutions. Like, for example, if you look at their MySQL space, right, of course, Oracle is investing in MySQL so they can sell MySQL enterprise subscription. But while doing that, they are doing fantastic their MySQL community edition, right, which gets probably 90% of their features or even more what are being developed overall, right? And the bad thing, of course, here is what it doesn't provide all the values of a true open source software. As the next stage, started in 2010, well, likely Amazon was founded, AWS Web Services was founded in 2006, but I think it really only started to significantly impact open source in 2010s, right? If you look at the cloud and open source, we see there is a lot of tensions out there, right? If you've been following this industry for the last few years, there is a lot of, fear, concern about, hey, what the Amazon among other clouds are really just free riding their open source software, not giving back or not giving back enough. Well, in reality, I see that is what these are businesses, right? And they are using the open source software according to its license in many cases, which, however, was not really designed and prepared for the cloud age, right? Like, for example, in the MySQL space, right, and their companies similar to MySQL, they are relying on the GPL software, say, with the idea if you want to build something as a non-open source software, which is a derivative fork of this open source software, you will need to buy the licensed version, right? As with that is called the dual license model, which MySQL pursued. Or even better, you will have to release your modified work as an open source. If you think about the modern day with Amazon Web Services, the already named Amazon Aurora is really the derivative work of GPL license MySQL. But because software is not distributed, because the software is simply accessible right through a protocol while hosted and managed by a cloud provider, Amazon doesn't need to distribute their Amazon Aurora as an open source or pay Oracle any licensing fees, right? And of course, that is not really which was accounted for, right? And those folks designed their business model and their licensing strategy. Now, what happened with that is what we see a lot because of this cloud danger. We can see a lot of mainly public and venture-funded companies have changed their licenses, at least for some of their software product, from the open source to the source available licenses, typically some sort of anti-cloud context, just preventing the Amazon from having their software and running that, right? But of course, while it is positioned to everyone as, hey, you know what, we are this small guys and we are looking to have this, you know, 800 pounds gorilla Amazon Web Services from eating our lunch, it also impacts users and customers of software much deeper, because that really locks you in if you want to use a particular server, particular features, right, or particular variant or particular way to use the database, namely from database as a service. Now, another thing which is interesting, which happened with the cloud, is what now we have the things being bundled together once again, right? So if you think about before the cloud, if I would want to run their MySQL somewhere, right? Often I would have a server priced so separately, right? Then there would be some hosting provider charges. Then I have the operating system I'm running, right, which I may go and support it, or may go to vendor, something like Red Hat, and there is MySQL, right? All those pieces, they are they're separate, right? And in the cloud, you are just buying cloud, and that's all combined, right, as a single price right now. And you know more can really see very easily how that price come about. And that means what if open source software, we have been losing that zero price effect. What is a zero price effect? Well, is what we as a human typically have a very significant difference in our mind and the price point where something is free and something is paid, right? Even if it costs a dollar, right? Because just some act of paying for something versus using it for free, right, serves as a barrier, right? And I think that was one of the values of open source, especially at their by the developers, right, and folks who don't get a lot of money to spend. Now, wherever I am using the open source on the cloud, right, for example, I have a Linux powered VM, or if I'm running a Windows powered VM, well, in both cases I have to pay something per hour. It is just what the price is slightly different, right, but it's not so large. Now, another thing which is very interesting, which has been going on in the space, is the cloud databases, right, or database as a service, which is obviously much easier to use than do-it-yourself open source solution, right? So if you think about using Amazon RDS, for example, which you just can spin up in a few clicks and it's kind of provides some limited habitability automatically, does backups, you know, automatically patch itself and so on and so forth. and just doing that for with open source components, it is significantly easy. And easy is obviously very seductive, especially for a lot of developers, which can be all under pressure to deliver the features that businesses need, right? The companies hire them need, rather than doing the cool stuff, right? And that is, of course, the danger, which for open source software, if you will. The even bigger one, I would say, is what's the not fully open source software is really quite accepted in the market. That is not a problem itself, right? Because it is fantastic to have a variety of software available, right? Proprietary software, open software, some sort of not quite open source software. But the danger is what the value of open source software may be eroding, and a lot of people do not quite understand the difference between what is a truly open source software and what is open source compatible software, and why you should choose one over another. Okay, now let's look at this current decade and see what's going on now, and maybe make some prediction about the future, which, as Niels Bohr says, is not an easy thing to do. Now, if you look at the open source, especially commercial open source software, and in a database space, we can see the great momentum for open source software. Red Hat remains their biggest success story of open source, right? With acquired by IBM for $34 billion, right? But you can see there are quite a few companies in the space, which have public and private, which have valuation of a very, which have a very significant valuation. What is also going on right now is that there is a lot of innovation in the open source database space, which I think is very cool, right? And again, many companies here, they don't release everything as an open source, but still they give a lot to the open source. Now, as you all know, we are going through worst pandemic in 100 years, and what we see is is very good for open source, because it does accelerate digital transformation. In many cases, people need to go online more faster, in many cases while they're also under financial pressure, and that really puts the open source to the front line, right? And I see that as the dust settles, that will be very helpful for open source databases. Now, I spoke about the database as a service a bit already. Now, what I think is interesting about database as a service is folks, especially developers, got a taste of that is increasingly becoming the preferred way to consume the database software, whether that's been open source databases, right, or not, right? We see a lot of traction here. One of the values what this database as a service approach provide is also that allows engineers to use multiple database technologies, better matching the application needs. Because if you think about that, if you take some exotic database technology and you say, well, now to deploy that for a mission critical application, I need to figure out how to provide availability, back it up, maintain its security, and so on and so forth, right? And a lot of stuff. Now you can probably deploy it in a few clicks and have their database vendor or a cloud vendor take on all that maintenance on themselves, and you can just use the database as you want for your application. The reality, though, is while many cloud vendors, they market as database as a service, as fully managed, it tends to be over-marketed, right? You would see while database as a service takes away a lot of toil, you still need a lot of choices to make, right? Like, for example, you may have heard and seen amazing number of database leaks from open databases right now over the last year or two. And a lot of that comes to today's database as a service stuff, because you still have somebody to manage security, right? If you have a developer who, for example, can't connect to the database, right? So if you just to make things easy for you, for himself, make it publicly open to the internet, right? With some the insecure password. Well, guess what, right? That is a problem. While currently it is typically a developer responsibility, not a cloud, not a cloud vendor, right? There are other issues which comes from developer and choose a user database directly without the supervision, right? For example, the costs, right? You would often find, because it's so easy to deploy the databases in the cloud now, right? Or scale the instance, right? Instead of requesting a new hardware and waiting for 3 months for that to be deployed, you can actually scale the instance size in a couple of clicks. We often see the databases running highly not optimized, a huge amount of waste. In many cases, with even rudimentary optimizations, you can reduce footprint for 3 to 10 times, right? Which is just not bad, which is both bad for a company's budgets and then for environment. Now, as I think about cloud, I think we have two models of the cloud which are being really evaluated right now, right, or approached the same way. One is cloud as a commodity, right? That is often often cloud, especially in the early days, was compared to something like electricity, right? And electricity is a commodity. You can buy electricity typically from multiple vendors, and it has no difference for you, right? You can choose and change it very easily. You can look at the cost, right? Or maybe you have some other preferences, right? Like buying electricity from environmentally friendly vendor, right? But it's easy, right? And we can see example, for example, things like S3, right? Which became standard as an open standard, right? All the big cloud implementations, there are some many compatible implementations like Minio, right? And if you're relying on such technologies, you can move your applications easily. The other thing, and that is where you would see a lot of cloud vendors are pushing you, is a highly differentiated cloud, which is designed to lock you in on as many properties, technologies available from a single vendor. And if you look in this case, for example, what Amazon well-architected is, it really talks about using a lot of those features they built, and which, of course, they are proud of, right? And they recommend to you, rather than having, for example, Kubernetes-based solution, which allows you to really deploy your application or on-prem or on a variety of clouds. I think a good thing here is what, in the grand scheme of things, nobody wants to be in hostage, especially as I mentioned, that Oracle Oracle example, like in many large enterprise has been here before. So what we see happening with the databases from the changing landscape is what we are getting to what you can call their multiverse, right? You would see folks using multiple database technology. You will have relatively few companies just saying, oh, we only run Postgres, right, or MySQL or whatever. Typically, it will be a large number of different database technologies. And also, especially for the larger enterprises, they tend to embrace a multi-cloud and a hybrid cloud, right, for all variety of reasons. Some of that is the lock-in, which I mentioned. Either could be based on the government regulations and realities. If you're multinational, which has to do business worldwide, then not in every country is the same cloud vendors may be available or acceptable, right, for business or particular reasons. Right. Now, if you look for this approach to multi-cloud, we have many proprietary solutions available, right? Google has Anthos, then there's like solutions from VMware, AWS Outposts, Microsoft has their solutions, so on and so forth, right? But at the same time, we have a Kubernetes which emerged as a leading open source API for hybrid and public cloud. Now, what is interesting with Kubernetes, because it has been initially created for stateless applications, the Kubernetes is often had a bad rep with databases, right? Initially, it was very impractical and dangerous to run the very much stateful databases on Kubernetes, but the modern Kubernetes has became quite better and increasingly you can run the databases database on it. Now, what is also interesting with Kubernetes is what you often would get. It's kind of not black and white, right? Being completely open source with Kubernetes, or going to the proprietary solution. In many cases, you can use Kubernetes interface while maybe use some proprietary solutions to simplify the Kubernetes management and kind of really pick in the right position for you of that open source and simplicity scale. So if you think about the open source databases, right, what we see has been going on, right, and what is important to continue doing. One is it's important to adapt for cloud native deployment in multi-cloud and hybrid cloud solutions, right? Not all databases have a very good solution for that right now, especially in open source space. Kubernetes API is obviously the API of choice, right? Now, what I think the next thing which needs to be done is really to build the simplicity which is comparable to their integrated database as a service solution. So you can really deploy the Kubernetes-based open source database with few clicks and have it automatically patch itself, backup itself, and so on and so forth, right? The major values which open source databases, which cloud databases provide. So the question to ask, what I would recommend if you're using database as a service, to ask how you can get the most value what open source provide in this reality, right? And that may refine your choices. You may want to choose something which is kind of slightly more complicated, but which gets a lot of value. From Percona standpoint, we are working according to rules, right, in this open source software world, right? We have operators for MySQL, with Perconnect CV cluster and for Perconnect Server MongoDB with MongoDB, which allows you to run those, as well as Perconnect monitoring management, which doesn't do much for management yet, but it really provides your functionality to monitor your databases quite conveniently. Okay, that was about the open source piece. Now let me talk in a few words about what is the landscape and changing going on in the database technology. Now, if you look at the historical view, in this case as well, you can see this kind of interesting resurgence. What all everything new is kind of old, right? If you look at the early days, there was really a lot of fragmentation in data model and query language, right? Frankly, a lot of database implementations were kind of built in the applications, and you know, so data model could be essentially whatever application desires. There have been variety of query languages, right, experimented with, and so on and so forth. Now, in 80s, 90s, we see the dominance of relational database and SQL as a query language, right? I mean, even in the early 2000s, right, I remember after dot-com crash, right? If you look at their new technologies, new companies coming up, right? All of them have been using, you know, just few relational databases, right? MySQL, Postgres, that was pretty much it, right? And there was not as much choice from mature database to begin with. Now in 2000s, especially the 2010s, we have a lot of innovation in both the data models and query language. We have a lot of custom database built rather than general purpose. Now let's look at the trends which are driving those changes. One is what developers and architects are empowered to make choices about the database to use, right? I already spoke about that. And the cloud makes using multiple database technologies easier. Another interesting, more technical things to consider is we have a lot more microservice architectures rather than the monolith, which has been in existence in the past decade. And each microservice typically is able to make its own choice and what is the most appropriate data store for its needs, right? Which creates explosion of those databases. We also are much more at peace at the concept of a multi-store when the same data, it may be stored many times, right? In so many cases now, instead of saying, hey, we'll store our data in, let's say MySQL, and that's the only database we'll use across all our teams, we can have their data which gets into MySQL, and then through something like Kafka, it's maybe replicated to Elasticsearch for full text search right queries, which is suited better for that than MySQL. And then also at the same time to something like ClickHouse for large-scale data analysis, right? Or to Snowflake, BigQuery, right? You choose it, right? Oh, all of those goes back to that trend of a multiverse, what I have been speaking. Now, we also talk a lot those days about SQL and NoSQL, like those are kind of two competing terms, right? And almost like two religions, which you have to follow. You can also describe it kind of as relational and non-relational as other terms. I think it's interesting to see what is interesting about NoSQL is it is not some particular database technology, protocol, even data store format, right? It is everything which is not relational. And why is it so? It's interesting to see at the ranking of popularity which come from DB engines, right? And if you see the fair ranking category, you can see what relational databases, they still account for majority of a use, right? In this case, that is why this split of relational and non-relational makes sense, right? But then, in reality, you see a lot of different types of a NoSQL database which are often purpose-built. And this is only one slice of that, right? Because even for something for databases, you may have a slice of, hey, relational databases, I will look at the row store versus column store, right? Those are typically both relational databases that have a different use cases and so on, right? Or in-memory databases, right? Or GPU accelerated databases. You can see a lot of those other ways to group them. Here is another interesting thing which shows about the growth, right? And you can see with something like time series databases has been growing over the last 2 years, explosively. Their relational database were kind of relatively stagnant, right? So you can see a lot of development and innovation happening beyond general purpose relational database. Now, there are a couple of questions which I think are not answered yet and they will be answered over the next few years. One is about relational model and SQL. There are kind of two approaches to that. Some companies, they break away and provide completely different data model, right? Like maybe MongoDB with its doc store. And then another provide extension to SQL relational data model, right? For example, JSON functionality in pretty much any relational database those days. Now, interesting enough, what folks who break away with relational database and SQL, they often kind of have to then go back and add something similar to SQL as a language because it's so popular, right? Like, for example, Cassandra has CQL, right? Or CouchDB has N1QL, right? And few others which really leverage of that dominance and so many people know in SQL. All right. And I think the interesting is where are we going to land about the multi-purpose databases versus multiple databases which simply store the data multiple time and keep synchronized, right? So for example, there is a multimodal databases, right, which can say, hey, just store all the data in us and we can be a relational database and key value store and graph database and so on and so forth, right? Or hybrid transaction analytical databases saying, hey, there is no need to move the data to your analytical data store, you know, you just run both your operational queries and analytical queries on the same database. Then other question, which I thought is interesting, is this kind of scale up and scale out, right? Scale up, that means, hey, your database is kind of focused on a single node for operation, something like MySQL, Postgres, right? There's a kind of traditional scale up databases, or scale out. The database like Yuga Bytes, CockroachDB, Cassandra, right? They're really designed for scale out, right, for running a large number of nodes to begin with, right? And the question in this case is, is there kind of room for both of them, or do we really are moving in a world where we will only have a databases which really can be run on large clusters very efficiently, and your classical scale up database will need to adapt or die. Now, here is what is interesting going on with the architecture trends with landscape, which is has been important. One is we have increasingly more databases, and I think like all the new databases or majority of the new databases, they come with a locally distributed in mind, right? Not think about the key single server, think about how they can work on the cluster of servers, right, from almost day one. A lot more technologies are also looking at geographically distributed, right? And the reason out there is if you really operate geographically, you have a lot higher latency, like for example, between US and Europe, right? Or Asia and so on, right? You often would often have some data governance questions. For example, you may say, well, the data of US users have to be stored on US and data of German users on European Union soil. That is something what geodistributed databases really think about. There is also a lot of work with cloud native databases, which are really designed to run on the Kubernetes as their operating system, not the conventional operating system like Linux. One architecture trend, which is not really connected to open source software, but in databases in generally, is that there is a rise of a public cloud only, you know, massively scalable databases, you know, DynamoDB, CosmosDB, you know, and so on, right? Which you can only run on a selected public cloud, and right, which do not have even kind of proprietary software which you can install and maintain on your own if you want to. Now, another interesting trend which we see kind of utilized for many new database engines in a separated storage and compute, right? So that means what you can scale your storage, right? In many cases, something like S3 compatible storage and your compute for processing independently rather than in the same way as you have with, you know, conventional databases. And also hardware acceleration is a big trend in the modern days, right? A lot of that is focused on the analytical databases, for example, use of a GPUs, but also on the storage level, right? We have pretty much all the storage vendors or large storage vendors have some sort of smart storage where you can offload some of the computational stuff, maybe compression, maybe filtering to the storage, right? And for me, the hope here is what we'll get some sort of open protocol here created, because so far a lot of those technologies they would use kind of proprietary drivers, right? And then you will have to really lock into that some particular hardware from some particular vendor if you want to utilize that, which is, well, not a great from logging standpoint. Well, anyway, as a summary, you can see what there is a lot going on in the open source database space. And it is really a great time to be involved with open source databases. So if that is your interest, please do that. And also, as I mentioned, as big dangers I see right now is devaluation and lack of understanding what the open source software and free software truly meant. So help your friends to understand that. I think we all will be better if a definition of open source software remains the same. That's all I have for you, and now I will be happy to answer some questions if you have any.
Thanks, Peter, for your talk. And if you have any questions, just write them in the chat. Okay, there's one question. In what point encryption at rest are in the OP world?
Yeah, I see that. Well, I mean, the encryption is obviously one of important components of data protection, right? And security at large. That is one component of that. In many cases, it's also a question of a compliance, right, which simply is being mandated by some of the policies, right, for data processes, right? For example, if you want to work with healthcare data, financial transactions, and so on and so forth. Now, you would. You would mention also may think, hey, if you connect to a database, well, we still can, you know, download the data, right, as a, if you have a permissions, but that is that is different, right? That is so if you look at the security, typically it's designed as multi-layer protection. There will be one way to protect the data, for example, you know, stolen from the hard drives directly, right? And then another to ensure only authenticated users can access the data they should. So there's a question from Henrik about the, you know, hijacking GPL, right? So, yes, I think it's an interesting what there was is a question: how do we protect from clouds hijacking the open source software, right? And should there be a license for that? There was attempt on this called AGPL license, which I think for years there was an idea what that should protect you from being used in the cloud in a way. But in reality, it wasn't found sufficient, right? Like, for example, we know one of the famous adopters of a AGPL, MongoDB, later moved to SSPL, non-open source, the open source license, right? So we'll see how that evolves, right? I think the tough thing with this cloud question is to understand, to see what is it. Is it the question of a software, or is it a question of service, right? And how you can draw the line appropriately where, as a customer, you can get a value of open source software by being able to use it, right, in database as a service form from multiple vendors, right, not being locked into that, right, versus protecting the original offer interests, right? I think it's kind of very, you know, interesting question which has not been figured out. But again, I appreciate their all the innovation in this case, and I think even those not quite open source licenses which you have many, they are still better than proprietary software for many users. Any other questions? Well, the question about Redis wasn't Redis AGPL before it decided it's not their model. So the Redis itself was and continues to be permissively licensed. I think that's BSD or some similar similar license. It is extensions which implemented by Redis Labs, which are subject to the license change, right? And I don't remember quite what license which was changed for them, but that was first. There was attempt kind of to add something called the Creative Commons clause, right? Which which kind of was added to the Apache license, I think, in that case, to making it not quite open source. But I think there was a blowback in community because it kind of confused people, right? It was looked like, well, that's almost as good as Apache license, while it's kind of not, right? It's like your honey with a little bit of a rat poison, right? Doesn't have a lot of qualities of honey left. So they did the right thing and changed to completely their own license, right, in this regard. Right. If you look at the MariaDB, they have this approach, BSL, Business Service License, which falls into what I call the open source eventually. Right. I, frankly, do not like this license. Right, of this approach, I like it much less than open core. And here is why. If you look at the MySQL approach, you know what the MySQL community edition, while it may be limited in certain cases, it is a very well maintained by Oracle. You see bug fixes, most important, you have a security updates coming on and so on and so forth, right? And if you need those additional enterprise features, well, you can choose to pay Oracle, right? Or you can use alternative implementation, for example, from Percona, or you can go and build it yourself. Now, what happens in MariaDB case, with a BSL, for example, max scale, right? What you have the only choice if you want to use a version, even for relatively basic features, you need to buy proprietary version, right? And the only way you get open source is something which is unmaintained, right? You are not getting security features for that and so on and so forth, right? So the open source version of that eventually open source is typically unsafe to use, right? Of course, in theory, you can say, well, you can hire a team maintain that outdated version yourself, but that is impractical for most organizations. Well, that's right, right? So if you look at the open source, eventually there is a period of so many years, right? It can be 3 years, it can be whatever the copyright holder chooses, right? I don't remember what is it for latest releases in MariaDB, Max Scale and other component. Now, to be clear, the MariaDB server, the server component, remains GPL, right? It remains completely open source, but there is some extra software like Max Scale, which is not open source in MariaDB case. What is the next database Percona will support? Well, we are looking at some databases, right? But we are not making any public commitment to that yet. So, a question about MongoDB kicked off all the major Linux distributions. Do you think we'll survive that? So, this is something I think to understand about how many venture-funded open-source companies operate, right? first, you are really getting a lot of stuff free, right? And that's how venture capital is spent. And then after you get like what is called critical mass, then this user base is starting to be heavily monetized, right? So MongoDB is have made that choice with SSPL after they have agreed, have in their opinion got a critical mass, right? So right, that's fine with them. And the MongoDB focus is a lot at the MongoDB Atlas, as I can see, the cloud-based variant, right? And at least a short term, we can see what the license change at SSPL. They can still maintain the growth, at least as their revenue, right? If that is MongoDB is a public company, so you can steal that. I think that is a very interesting in terms of what that's what will happen in the next 3 to 5 years. I think, in fact, what MongoDB is now not open source, that creates an opening for some really open source document database, right? And I think it will come out of somewhere over the next next 2 years. We'll see that. Okay, well, I don't see any more questions coming in.
Okay, yeah, thanks for your talk, and thanks everybody for being here at the FrostCon online edition. Feel free to join our closing in a few minutes in lecture room one. There's one more question.
Well, I think did we reach a tipping point? Well, I think is what the cloud providers, that is important change, which forces a lot of the open source community in the database space, especially evolve in their business model. Right, so that is surely a question, and I think that is a very important transformational change in the industry. Okay, well, looks like that was the last question. Thank you everybody for attending. That has been a pleasure.